I think it's definitely about how you look at things and turning those tough times into something positive, or at least something you can look back and have a bit of a giggle about, because we've got to survive some.
Welcome to Careers in Fashion.
Hi everyone, I'm Mirella Barbosa, Enterprise Consultant at London College of Fashion Graduate Futures, the department where students and alumni can get support for their career, freelance, and startup aspirations. On today's podcast, we have three alumni who are running award-winning businesses started during their times at London College of Fashion. They are here to talk about the ups and downs of the entrepreneurial journeys and share some advice on how to grow a brand and maybe even win some awards along the way. I'm here with Shamaya Dewey, founder of Dewey, Hanan Tantush, founder of Intotum, and Emily Taylor, co-founder of Sages. Welcome, ladies. It's a pleasure to have you. Before we jump in, I'd like to hear more about your companies and your background. So could you briefly introduce yourselves to our audience?
So hi, my name's Shamaya. I graduated in 2022 and I studied fashion design development at London College of Fashion.
Hi, my name is Hanan. I'm founder of Intotum. I graduated in 2023 from BA Fashion Design Technology Women's Wear.
Hi, I'm Emily. I'm CEO and co-founder of Sages, and I graduated from MA Fashion Futures in 2021.
Amazing. Thank you. Okay, so let's jump into your brands. You all had the idea for the brands during your days at LCF. So we would like to know what motivated you to develop a business at first stage.
So really long story short, I've always wanted to be a fashion designer. That was just something that was like intuitive to me growing up. I was just really fortunate to know what I wanted to do from a really, really young age. And then again, I also knew I wanted to go to LCF from a really young age. By a really weird chance encounter I had with, like, I think it was a neighbour maybe, and they told me that their niece or nephew or someone went to LCF. And I just thought, that sounds like a really fun idea. I can live in London, I can go and study fashion. So from the age of maybe like 10, I knew I want to go to LCF, I want to be a fashion designer. So that was like a bit of background. And when I say fashion designer, I knew I wanted to do it for myself. I wasn't that interested in working for a particular fashion house. So I've always had that kind of entrepreneurial mindset, I guess. And then I met a young person who was short stature just before I went to study at uni in 2018. And again, long story short, I just realised that there wasn't anything on the market for people who measured under 5 foot, and that these people not only proportionally were much smaller than lots of us average height people, but that they were struggling with fastenings and that they needed different adaption. So I've learned a lot along the way about disability and fashion and heightism and how people treat people that are smaller. And I had the opportunity to study on the EDIPS course, the Enterprise Diploma in Professional Studies. And it was like the perfect thing for me. I couldn't afford to go into the industry. I just didn't have the money to support myself. And as we all know, internships are often unpaid or really poorly paid. And that just didn't work for me. So I had the option to do EDIPS. And I worked in a school for the year as an LSA alongside that. And I built Dewey. And then it just didn't seem right to end the journey at the end of my EDIPS journey. And I've just carried it forward. And we're still going today and kind of progressing and doing more things. So yeah, there's a bit of background about me, why I started, and I guess a bit of insight into me as a person and the fact that I had that kind of entrepreneurial mindset, I guess.
So I think very similar to Shamaya in the fact that I knew I didn't want to work for someone else. I think I knew very early on, like, you know, doing work experiences or even seeing my parents working, I didn't want to work in an office or anything like that. It just sounded like the worst case scenario to me. So I wanted to do something creative and something that I was in control of. So I knew I wanted to start my own business, and I also knew I wanted to do that in fashion. But I, you know, never imagined that it would be in adaptive fashion particularly. You know, you, when you're younger and you think you're going to do fashion, you see these giant ball gowns and things on the runway and think that's what you're going to do. But it wasn't until I was about 16 and my granddad had cancer for the third time. And during that process, he had to have a stoma and a urostomy bag fitted. And once he had that, basically, he just consistently struggled with clothing as a result of it. Everything was uncomfortable with it, rubbing on it, too tight for the bag. And that was kind of the first exposure I had to the fact clothing could really just become a nightmare when you've got a disability. And that was the moment where I really thought, well, isn't there a solution? And realised there wasn't one. And so going into university, I knew I wanted to do adaptive fashion. And even in my interview for LCF, I said, I'm here to do adaptive fashion, you know, either support that or I don't want to come here. And they were really supportive of that. And so I basically, over the course of the 3 years I was studying women's wear, continued to develop adaptive fashion until eventually in my final year was the point where I started to think of it as being more of a business and started to kind of design the concepts of the business and attend, you know, graduate futures things and events and start to realise how it could become a business more than just a graduate collection.
Yeah, so I think I potentially have a slightly different journey than the other two. So I did work in fashion for like quite a number of years, I think about 8 years, mainly in fast fashion. And I actually loved my job, but then I became really disillusioned with how polluting the fast fashion industry was. So I sort of wanted to do something. I wanted to make a change. I did actually have my own sustainable fashion brand alongside that for a few years, but I realized that the impact of that, of my personal brand, was not as big as I wanted it to be. So I went to LCF, did an MA in fashion futures, which was amazing because I think it really enables you to sort of switch your mindset and how you think about things on like a really big scale and futures think. And I met my co-founder Alice on the Fostering Sustainables practice brief, which was part of the MA collaborative challenge. And that was in 2020. And yeah, we've been going ever since then. So yeah, we make natural dyes from food waste, and we identified that there was a real need for a scalable, affordable, like easy to integrate solution for natural dyes. And that's where we started. And yeah, we've been going for, I think, 3.5 years now.
Wow. Oh, time flies, right? It does. I remember, yeah, I remember all of you like coming to us, like working on your applications to the Enterprise Challenge. So yeah, it's been a while. So speaking of applications and yeah, like developing your businesses, having support and resources to tap into when you are starting out is very important. So we would like to know about the kind of support you had access to and how you used and how did you like make the most of the business support you have used.
So I think we probably kind of can go in stages, I guess, because I think I won the Enterprise Challenge in 21, and then Emily, I think yours was 22, and then Hannah, you were 23, weren't you? In terms of support that I had, I was quite fortunate, actually, because I did have quite a lot of support at the time. And because it was 2021, we were kind of in and out of lockdown. So it was, I had a lot of time, basically, to focus on this stuff. I think I didn't have to worry so much about balancing a social life as much as other people were at the time. Like we were locked down, so had a lot of time, that's one thing. And I took it really seriously when I applied to the Enterprise Challenge. It was the first one that I applied to, the first kind of award. It was almost like a bit of a test of validation for me, like, I think this really works and I really believe in it, but do other people and will the judges believe in it as much as I do? And I had quite a bit of support from Edits, because I was on that course, and in particular Henrietta was my kind of business coach, I think we called them at the time. So I remember talking to her about it and discussing a few things. And I know that I also kind of came to Graduate Futures and got some help that way. And I believe there was possibly some webinars or something at the time that I would have attended. And I think if anyone's thinking of applying for different awards, to always attend these webinars that they do in the beginning, because they'll always give you little snippets of things that work. Or another thing that I found really helpful, and I still do when I apply for different awards and competitions today, is I'll always look at previous winners and try and gauge how I sit alongside them. Like, if all the previous winners were in, I don't know, let's say tech, then I know that maybe I won't have as good a chance. Whereas if the winners are in different aspects, or they're all in the creative industries, and I can kind of see where I'm sat. And also, I also think it's quite good to look at who the judges are, because then you can tailor your answers slightly to who the judges are and what they care about. So if I know that one of the judges really, really cares about sustainability and that's their main thing, I'll make sure to really explain that part of my business. But if one of the judges, if none of the judges care about sustainability, I'll still talk about it, but I might focus on something else, like, I don't know, the finances, for example. So I kind of had different support systems, and that's some of the things that I've learned along the way. So yeah, that's me.
Emily, what are your insights?
Yes, sure. So I'm trying to remember back in my mind. It wasn't even that long ago, but it was sort of in the haze of COVID, I think, we first approached Graduate Futures. So I think we actually, I was originally on like a larger team. It was myself, my current co-founder, and then two others. And we applied as a group of four to the Enterprise Challenge. And I actually think our application was really bad. Like, it was terrible. It was so bad that I think I remember when I eventually met Frances, she was like, oh, you're the ones that did that application. That was really bad. But then in the course of that year, we were in touch with Graduate Futures. We really like honed our pitch. I think we really worked on not just on the slide deck, which obviously is important visually, but just on all the information behind that, and really built the business out. So then when it came to 2022, when we applied and when we eventually won, we had been, although we only applied and then, you know, it's only a couple of months, we actually had been working on it probably about a year prior. That support was amazing, and it was ongoing as well, like before, during and after. The Creative Enterprise, I forgot the name, but changes, the Enterprise Challenge competition.
Yeah, the Enterprise Challenge competition. Yeah. And Hannah, how was your experience?
I'd say because the Enterprise Challenge wasn't actually the first competition I entered, I entered the Mayor's Entrepreneur competition first. And I mean, there's quite a few obviously graduate and small business competitions going about, so I think I entered maybe two before I entered the Enterprise Challenge. And so I'd started to kind of get the hang of what a application was really asking for. So even though the you know, LCF competition asks different questions, I knew the kind of things to include because other applications had more questions, and it specifically asked, you know, who's your competitors and things like this. But really the help I got was especially in how to refine my idea, because when I'd very, like at the very, very beginning, when I'd come up with the idea kind of, I don't know, 2022, is when I approached Graduate Futures and said, you know, I want to have a one-to-one. I've got this idea, but I don't know if it can be a business and in what form it should be. Should I be trying to be a freelancer or all these different kind of things? And so I basically put myself on your guys' radar from the beginning, but also tried to use any resources possible. So I filled out, one of the first things I did was fill out that business canvas, and all of that about who's my competitors, how much will I sell it for, all these different things. And of course, like, that's changed massively to what I do now, but at the beginning I didn't really have any idea what it was really going to be. I am a designer, not a business person, and so you learn the business stuff kind of along the way. And then once I got through to the Mayor's Entrepreneur competition, that's when I had loads of support from you guys once I got through to the kind of semi-finals, and then the finals obviously was all about how to pitch. You know, you put me in contact with people from Making for Change and things like that, so I could ask questions about production, finance support, and then on the build up to the entrepreneurs competition, that was the main thing I was worried about getting questions about, was, you know, when they say, what's your kind of projected sales for the next 3 years? And like, I mean, it's all made up, isn't it, really? And so that was honestly the best thing, was being able to speak to a financial advisor that you guys set up. And, you know, she said she does finances for big companies like Burberry and things like this. And still most of it is just made up. It's a projection. And that's what made me feel so much more confident in the fact that, you know, these big businesses are still estimating. So I myself, as a small business owner, can put estimations and be confident in the fact they're estimations.
Yeah, as you speak, like, memories are coming to my mind. It's like the first time I've met you, like all the prep for the competitions, like rooting for you guys. It's such a, like, amazing journeys to, yeah. And I think it's so nice that you can come back and share with, like, potential winners. Since we are talking about the enterprise challenge, besides kickstarting your business during your time at London College of Fashion, you also have another thing in common, winning the enterprise challenge, which is our annual business idea competition open to all LCF students. So as you said, Hannah won last year, 2023, Emily in 2022, and Shamaya in 2021. So we'd like to hear about the impact that the prize had in your careers and how it also, you know, impacted your decision to keep keep developing the brand.
I think for me, obviously, out of us three, I was the one who won kind of first in 2021. It was like invaluable. I don't know how else to describe the impact that it had, because it was the first competition that I applied to. So like I mentioned before, it was like a bit of a test of validation. Like, do other people believe in this as much as I do? Am I able to convey the importance of the brand and the emotional impact as much as the kind of fashion side of it? So winning was huge for the validation, that it just showed me, okay, if I can win this competition, which is quite competitive, like everyone that applies has got great businesses. I'm sure we can all vouch for that, that the finalists, like, you really don't know who's going to win because people are great. So then to win against some really great business ideas and some really great people was amazing. But also, for me at the time, there wasn't a cash prize that year, but I was entered into the Creative Enterprise Challenge, which was the one that was run by UIL, mm-hmm. automatically because I won this one. And because I won that, I actually then went on to win the Creative Enterprise Challenge as well. And with that one, I won £5,000 funding. So again, had I not have entered this thing, I didn't even know the Creative Enterprise Challenge even existed. So that was just like a great bonus. That meant I won two things, and I'm sure they were the day after each other. And so it was like a great couple of days. And I won this £5,000. And at the time I had no money to start this. Like, I had all the ideas, I had all the prep, all of the designs and all the research, and I had no money to start it. So that gave me the money to start, basically. Mm-hmm. And then that £5,000 was probably lasted me about a year. I don't know how I made it stretch so far, but I did all my sampling. I did all the tests and I did a couple of like small fashion shows, and I did a little pop up in Oxford Street and did lots of things. And like I say, had I not have applied and won that competition, I don't know how the trajectory would have been so different, because like I say, I didn't have the funding. This was the thing that gave me it. I didn't have the validation at that point, so I don't know confidence wise how long it would have taken me to reach that. And then I really learned from that experience that you really can just kind of achieve anything that you set your mind to, is kind of what I took away from it, that I've I've won this thing that means so much to me, and it, the judges believed in it, and they believed in it so much that in their creative enterprise challenge, one of them even put £5,000 of their own money into my business. So that must mean that it must work. And it basically just, it built my confidence so much that I then went on to apply for loads of other awards. And obviously some I won, some I got through to the finals but didn't win, some I just didn't get through at all. But it just taught me, I think, just to go for it. So I think that's probably the biggest thing that it did for me. And yeah, had I not have done that, I don't know how else I would have made it work. I would have somehow, but it would have been a completely different journey.
And Emily, you are the winner after Shamaya, so 2022. So how was winning for you and Alice to kickstart Sages?
Yeah, no, it was amazing, actually. I can echo some of what Shamaya has said. So I think our cash prize was maybe £3,000, which was great. Obviously, cash is always good. But I think the sort of like support package around it was probably what was like the most valuable thing. So we actually got some workspace membership, which was really useful, which we used for a whole year, and we used it for our meetings and for networking. That was amazing. We also had some PR support. There was just like this whole sort of package of support, which was things that we wouldn't have been able to A, afford, or B, even have the contacts for, I think, in that sort of like first year of starting the business. And then also, I think actually that just pitch practice is really good. So just being able to get up in front of a room of people, and it's quite like an intimate setting as well, the Enterprise Challenge, like you can see the whites of everyone's eyes. There's no hiding. So I think that practice was really, really good. And the people in the audience are great too. So we had some really good connections. For example, we had someone from Re London was in the audience, who we then stayed in contact with, and we're now part of their program as well. So yeah, I think it's all the support, and then also, yeah, the really valuable sort of network aspect as well.
Great. And Hannah, how was it for you?
So for me, obviously, it was the second competition I was doing, because after the mayor's competition. But with that one, although I'd had to pitch, we can't show slides, and it is a very kind of small pitch. It was, you know, there was a panel of judges, but then the people in the audience were other competitors or parents and things. We didn't have a real audience. And so I only had to really pitch to those eight judges, which was still nerve wracking, but I didn't have to think about coordinating with slides or anything like that. Whereas the pitch for the entrepreneur competition was like a proper pitch, really. It's a, you know, a real business pitch. I had my samples on mannequins next to me. I had to have slides, and I had to, you know, kind of coordinate all of this seamlessly. So that was the bit that I really appreciated, all the support. It was being able to practice that pitch with you guys at Graduate Futures, like multiple times, multiple iterations of my pitch script and the slides and things, because I'd never made a pitch deck before. And slides from that pitch deck I still basically use. And so I've altered them, but the core of what I did there is what I still carry on now. And so it was, you know, invaluable in that sense, because you can, you know, search all over the internet how to do a pitch deck, and there's too much information on it almost. And being able to sit with someone that actively knows what you should be doing is just really invaluable, because people will charge hundreds and hundreds of pounds to make you a pitch deck if they want to, but you know, it's much easier if you do it yourself. And also it was great being able to kind of pitch in front of an audience, but an audience that actively wants to support you, because, you know, going forward, I've done quite a few other pitches in other competitions and other situations, and there's always going to be some people that, you know, don't really care that much and are just sat there. And so being able to have that first experience pitching in front of people that are all smiling at you and want you to do well was so encouraging. And it definitely meant that, you know, in future pitches, like I've gone on to do some really big pitches, I've felt a lot more confident with hundreds of people staring at me now that I did that pitch in front of, you know, like 50 people that were all smiling in front of me. And so winning that as well was absolutely massive validation, because as you guys all said, we were up against really stiff competition, and it was really nice as well winning in my year, because the second place winner was a friend of mine, Grace, who also is doing adaptive fashion. She does adaptive footwear. So it was really nice kind of experience to show that people were actively, you know, behind adaptive fashion and inclusive fashion. And it was, so it was really, it wasn't more, it felt like we both kind of won in our year, to be honest.
Hey, let's stick with the winning competitions topic, because among yourselves, the list of awards and grants that each one of you have won is extensive. So could you name some of them and share some insights on how to prepare your application and your pitching? You like, tackled it a little bit, but further to the Enterprise Challenge, how did you prepare for all the other competitions and funding opportunities and grants that you have won so far? Hannah, maybe let's start with you. You are fresh from the Santander Global competition.
Yeah, I'd say that the competitions, the first thing is to kind of identify what you're trying to do with your business. So I think, you know, this comes from your business plan, business canvas, any of these things. So that was the first thing I had to approach with the pitch, was what am I really trying to do with this business? And so with me, it helped to find the problem and, you know, what am I doing is the solution. So I could start off with, this is the problem, this is what I'm trying to do. And that was it's a simple, really simple way to structure it, that for, I'd say 99% of businesses, you can do that. And then it was also then building in all these other bits. So showing off all the things you've done. You know, you probably, as a small business founder, doing so many different things a week that you don't really take note of the hundreds of small achievements along the way that are actually massive. And so it's being able to recognize those in a pitch and show your journey. But yeah, I've done quite a few now. So yeah, I did the Mayor's Entrepreneur competition first. And that was quite a few stages of pitching. Video pitches and then an in-person pitch. The entrepreneur competition, that was obviously a final in-person pitch. And then I went on to win the AXA Startup Angel Award, which was a video submission pitch. And that one also required a written piece. And so when you don't have the opportunity to pitch in person, it can be a bit of a disadvantage, because often it's about you as a person selling the business, and your personality and your passion is what sells the business a lot of the time. So from having the opportunity to pitch previously, it was, what would I be saying if I was in front of somebody? That's what you want to write down. So if someone asked you, you know, you've got 5 minutes, I want you to basically argue your case why you should win this, that's what you should be writing down. So it's all the good things you're doing, all the positive impact you can have, but then also sprinkle in those business things. So, you know, the financial impact or financial forecast you've got, add those in so people can quantify it as a business, not just as an idea. And there are things I, you know, have carried through all throughout, you know, the Santander competition I just won in December, and then the global that I was at a few weeks ago. You know, that was in the middle of the biggest conference in Spain. And I had the CEO of Santander Spain and the CEO of Microsoft Spain sat in front of me.
Wow.
So it's extremely nerve-wracking, but I obviously tried not to show that. And so it was just being confident in my idea and knowing that other people, you know, support it. I've got, you know, a community supporting me, fellow founders support me. And so even if on the day it doesn't go great, I don't view that as a loss for the business. I view it as, you know, there might be one person sat in that crowd that was watching that thought, oh, that was really good, and that you can then have that opportunity to talk with afterwards and network with. There's always opportunities to be had, even if you don't win that pitch or that competition.
Thank you. Emily, how was the experience to you? You also have won like, some grants and competitions in the past 2-3 years.
We've probably gone more down the grant route, I would say, because we're like quite like a research and development based business. So we've done a lot of Innovate UK applications, which I would really recommend to people starting their businesses, but they are also very difficult and very long winded. But yeah, the same kind of things apply really. So if you are doing grant applications, like these Innovate UK grants, it's, you have to get all the information into your pitch. So you need to be able to, yeah, share your financials, share your vision, share your team, like share what you're going to do with the money, all these sorts of things. But you also have to do like a really good storytelling piece on what the problem is and why your solution is the best solution to fix it. So you have to just really convey what you know, convey your personality, show that you know everything, but you have to get it down in, you know, a concise amount of words as well. So I would actually also recommend, because I have seen in a couple of applications, I always recommend people do like not, don't use ChatGPT or anything for applications, because they tend to get like waffly and a bit wordy and have all these weird superlatives in them. I think you've really got to do it from scratch. And yeah, if you've got like a passion, it will come out. The other thing is that, so I think we've now, our biggest grant we had was a smart grant, which was £500,000. But it took us 3 attempts to get that grant over the course of probably a year. So, you know, keep trying. You get feedback on these things and then you can improve. And eventually, yeah, hopefully you can get somewhere.
Shamaya, how was the experience to you winning competitions and applying the money into your business?
Yeah, I think echoing what Emily and Hanan both said, I think one of the big things was learning not to take it personally when you don't get as far as you would have liked, you don't win. So while on the outside it might look like all three of us just win everything we apply to, I'm sure we could all vouch for the fact that's not quite true. And especially for myself, I've done 4 really big applications for the Innovate UK competitions. And anyone that's done an Innovate UK competition or award knows the application takes forever. They recommend you take 100 hours on it to actually do just your application. And I've done 4 of them, haven't won a single one, haven't got through to the finals. And it's frustrating. It can be really disheartening, especially when you see people around you winning and getting through to the things that you kind of really wanted to. But I think you learn with time that it's fine, and that just because you haven't won this thing doesn't mean that what you're doing doesn't work or that someone else won't believe in it. Saying that, I have gone on to win some quite exciting things. So I was part of the DBase cohort of 2022, and I had like a really amazing month where I won and got through about 3 or 4 competitions, just kind of all one after the other. And it was like, it was a really hectic time. It was when I was graduating. So I think I must have graduated in, it's either June or July. I can never remember which month it is. Let's say June, make life easier. And so I graduated. I had this kind of thought process of, I know I want to continue Dewey, and I know I don't want to go and get a job because it's going to take my efforts away, but I don't know how to support myself. And then I won the DBase award, which was £15,000. And then I won another kind of smaller award with a brand called Pour Moir, and that was £5,000. And then I got onto the UAL accelerator course, which was £6,000 for you participating, and kind of won this sum of money, which for one was just like incomprehensible at the time. Like, I come from like a working class background, like that kind of money just felt crazy anyway. But also it meant that I had all this validation really quickly in quick succession, and it kind of solved my issue of what I'm going to do after uni, how am I going to support myself. So as much as it can be really disheartening not to win some things, you do also have periods where things go really well. And I found that I've been running Dewey now for about 3.5 years, I think, and I've learned that you kind of just have these ebbs and flows. Sometimes it does just feel like you're not getting anywhere, or you're not winning things, and things don't seem to be flowing as nicely as you wish they would. But then give it a few weeks and then you kind of have a bit of a pick up. So I think that's one of the biggest things I've learned, just to kind of pick yourself up, dust yourself off. Sometimes I just say to myself, look, I'm just going to have a day to feel a bit rubbish if I've not won this thing. And then the next day, you've just got to kind of brush it off, move on, continue again. And like Emily said, you get feedback for a lot of these things. And if you don't, you can ask for it a lot of the time. And it helps you to grow. And then now when I look back and I think, at the time, I thought that application was great. But actually, now if I read it back, I wouldn't say anything like that anymore because I've learned so much along the way. So as much as it can be disheartening in the moment, you learn so much from it and it helps you to progress. So it's all good in the end.
I'm glad that you talked about the good days and the not so good days, because my next question is about the reality of being a founder, an entrepreneur, because we know that contrary to these quote unquote overnight success stories that we see on social media, growing a business is not easy. It's not a walk in the park, definitely. So I'd like to know, what are the biggest challenges you have faced and some of the main lessons that you have learned so far? Who wants to start?
I can start with this one. Okay. Biggest challenges. I mean, to be honest, the biggest challenge for us is kind of always fundraising, because although we're fortunate and we have raised like a good amount of money, the business has really, really high costs. We pay researchers, we have premises, we have expensive equipment that we have to run. So it's kind of that constant balance between fundraising, but then also making sure that your head is still in the day to day and getting on with business and actually doing what you want to be doing. So you're not just talking about what you want to do all the time and not actually doing it. That is definitely one of our biggest challenges. And I also think, so we're building a team at the moment. I think getting people on board who are the exact right fit for your company is a big challenge, but it's also really, really important. So making sure that not only do they have the right expertise, but they're kind of on board with the journey. Because as we've mentioned, it's up and down. Like, yeah, it's kind of constant. But yeah, the payoff hopefully is good at the end. It's like rewarding. I'm trying to think of any other sort of things. I'm in the middle of a fundraising round at the moment, so this is like forefront of my mind. But yeah, I'll let the others answer, and if I think of anything else, I'll chip in.
Okay. Hannah, your piece of advice?
I'd say it's about being resilient, to be honest. I think, to be honest, my biggest challenge would be that there's just not enough hours in the day. I work more than I sleep, 1,000%. And I'm, you know, in the interest of being realistic, I've consistently kept part-time or full-time jobs alongside running the business. Because unless you want to be kind of using that grant funding or whatever you kind of raised to pay yourself, you have to earn money from elsewhere. You know, I'm not coming from a background where my parents are just going to be like, you know, there's some money, go do what you want. I need to work if I want to live. So I have worked jobs all alongside. I still work a part-time job alongside running the business. And so what I do is I work 4 days on the business, 3 days at my other job, and then I'll usually get home from that and continue to work on the business. And it's, you know, not a fun way to do it, I think, but it's not that I don't want to do it. I would much rather do it this way and, you know, get no sleep and consistently work, because I wouldn't be able to sleep almost. I have too much motivation for the business. I have so many ideas constantly, so many different things I want to do and achieve. And that's the best way for me. And so it's learning to let go sometimes and prioritize so that I can get as much done as efficiently as possible. So that's really been it. I'd say kind of get a plan in place, get a support network in place. You know, I call my sister and my mom like at least once a day just to rant about something, or an email I receive that I'm like, do I come across all right in this? You know, I might be a founder and I might, you know, look successful on Instagram or whatever, but I'm still 21 and I still need to ask my mom if something sounds right when I send it off. So I think just, you know, do what you can do, but also know that it's totally fine to call people for help and take a break when you need to.
And Shamaya, your two cents.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like I've almost got a bit of a blend of kind of what Emily and Hanan have both said. So in terms of like the real honesty and the real kind of, I guess, rawness of being a founder is that when I started, I kind of briefly mentioned before, I couldn't afford to go and get a job in industry. And I was fortunate enough to go onto the EDIPS course. And to support myself, I worked full time in a school. So I was an LSA and I loved that job. It was the most draining job I've ever had, but loved it. So I would go and work. And it was kind of roughly 8 to 5. So it was long. It was a long day. And it's a really draining job working with young people with special needs. And I would then go home. So let's say I get home. I would usually get home about 5. And then I would work on Dewey until 11 p.m. usually. Sleep, wake up, do the same thing every day. All the weekends pretty much were spent growing the business, learning, sampling, speaking to people, getting meetings booked in to try and progress. So I've gone through that stage of working full time. And then I got some grant funding, as I mentioned, in 22. And I won a couple of competitions, got some money and decided that I didn't want to work full time anymore and that I was going to give it a go of doing this full time. And I was going to basically live off the most minimal amount of money I could. And long story short, I've been doing that now since the summer of 22. So almost 2 years I've been living like that. So it's not glamorous at all. Like, I don't have a brand new car and designer handbags and I don't know, all the things I'd love to have at some point. And again, in the interest of complete honesty, like Hanan was saying, I am selling my car this weekend to fund myself for the next couple of months because, like Emily, I'm in the middle of a fundraising round, our first one. And I think you have an idea of when you think you might get the money, and then it's usually a little bit further away than you thought. So thought we might have it by the end of March, looking like it could be April/May. So you just make it work. I think as founders, you just do something to make it work. But I was actually talking to our director of marketing this morning and telling her about this whole thing. I'm selling my car, and you can look at that as like a really like depressing, negative thing, but turn it on its head and like, I'm living my dream. I'm building this brand that I love. I'm really passionate. I work with people I love, and selling my car in the interest of supporting myself right now for the next couple of months means that I can carry on and we can get the money in the bank and we can support a team and we can all have salaries and we can actually build it. So I think sometimes the entrepreneurial journey can sound really scary. And I know that in the beginning, I found it quite scary to think, how am I going to support myself? And I hear all these stories of these CEOs that never sleep, and I don't really want that to be me. Although you do kind of get into that space sometimes, and you probably have to pull yourself out, and it's a bit of give and take. But I definitely think putting a positive spin on it, that you kind of have to give some things to be able to live your dream for a period. This isn't forever. I'm not going to be living on pennies for my whole life, and at some point all of this work will pay off. And well, that's what I tell myself anyway. We can look back and almost laugh about it and say, oh, remember when I had to sell my car to support myself, and now we're doing this. So I think it's definitely about how you look at things and turning those tough times into something positive, or at least something you could look back and have a bit of a giggle about, because we've got to survive somehow.
Yeah, sorry, I'll just chip in at the end as well now, because now you've both said things, I'm thinking of things too. But yeah, no, just to echo what they both, what Shamaya and Hanan have both said, I think often we get asked questions like, oh, like, how did you start your business? Like, how did you support yourself? Like, are you full time? That kind of thing. And I think people have this perception that you start a business, you work on that business full time, it makes money. And that is not the reality. So we also, worked prior to going full time on the business. I worked freelance, Alice had a full time job, and then we eventually took some investment and we were able to work full time, which we're really fortunate to be able to do. But it was a solid 18 months, if not 2 years, probably, before we were able to do that. And I think it's important for people to know that, because yeah, that is the reality, but it's also doable. You know, you can do it and you can work a job and you can start a business and yeah, you can get there.
Yeah, so the conversation is going so well, but unfortunately we need to wrap up. But before we end the podcast, I have a final question. I'd like you to share some advice to a student or a graduate who wants to set up a business. So basically, where they should start?
So I think, as probably what we have said is testament to, enter all the competitions. Even if you don't win them, even if you don't get through to the first round, you'll get feedback and then you can improve on that. And you always learn something from it. You know, go to networking events, speak to people. Even if you're not, you know, like a super extroverted person, I don't think that matters. I think you can still have really good conversations with people and build your network and, yeah, find people that will really support you and be in your corner. And yeah, just, it is quite scary, but like, just don't be scared. Just like, put yourself out there. You might do a bad application. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's completely fine. And yeah, you can just build on it. So yeah, just sort of like, get going, take all the opportunities that get presented to you.
Yeah, I think to add to that, I think I would say one of the biggest things I learned that I've touched on briefly is this confidence thing. And I say it all the time, especially now that Dewey is a team of 7 people, roughly. And Ooh. All of the people in the team are older than me. They're all at least late 30s plus. And they're all really successful people who have built and exited businesses or worked in some of the biggest companies and whatever it might be. And as like a 25-year-old founder, I'm a bit like, I'm out of my depth here sometimes. And sometimes I'm in rooms with people that are so successful that it feels like a dream. But it's a bit of a fake it till you make it thing. And I think, like, in general, no one knows as much as they seemingly do sometimes. We're all faking it till we make it. I think if you act confident, then that comes across and that's enough sometimes. And I think when we talk about competitions especially, one of the biggest things I'll say to people all the time is just be really confident in what you do. Because if you're not confident, like, why is anyone else going to believe in what you do? And I remember speaking to a business mentor a while ago and saying, it was when we were going to, I was kind of talking about fundraising and I really wanted to start going out to investors and was really worried about the fact that I was young and I was female, because I know that there's one thing being a female founder that you have maybe extra barriers, but then there's another layer of being young and people not thinking you're capable enough. And he kind of described it to me as, if you go in a room and you're really, really confident and you really believe in what you do, an investor or a judge or whoever it might be is way more likely to also believe in you and be really interested in you. Because if you go in and you're really unsure of yourself and you believe in your business, but you're not quite 100% and you're a little bit nervous, they're going to pick up on that and not have the same level of as belief. So my biggest piece of advice is fake it till you make it. Even if you're not confident, pretend you are. Like, just work on it, because we're all faking it to make it, I think. And yeah, I'm in rooms with people all the time that I'm way out my depth, but you just have to fake it to make it.
Hannah,
I would say my top tip for starting out is just talk about your business. A lot of people I met through other competitions or networking or even, you know, sessions run by Grad Futures, where there were so many people that were just like, oh yeah, well, it's just an idea, it's kind of this, and they didn't want to tell me what it was for fear of, you know, me stealing their idea or something. And the reality is, no one wants to steal your business idea. No one else has the same commitment or the same time to be bothered to steal your idea. So talk about it, and talk about it as if it's a real business. You know, don't say, oh, well, it's just a thing and I've not really done it. Just be like, yep, so I make this, I do this. And so the more you talk about it as a business, you know, you could call it manifesting if you want to, but you can also just call it, you know, confidence in your business and confidence in the fact that it is going to be a business. So I'd say talk about it to as many people as you can, because you never know who you're going to meet, you never know who's going to be in the same room with you. And there's a lot of opportunities I've got that purely from just being in the same room as somebody else and confidently talking about my business and the successes my business has had, that then intrigues people. And they want to, you know, people always want to find out about something new. And if something sounds like it's doing well, they want to jump on that. And so just basically self-promotion all the time.
Hannah, Emily, Shamaya, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for your honesty and for sharing your inspiring journey with us. It's been like a wonderful, yeah, experience to do this podcast and reminisce a little bit about your early, yeah, steps developing your business today. So yeah, that's all for us today. Thank you again. And for anyone who would like to learn more about their brands, check the links on the description box. Okay, thank you everybody, and see you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.